Welcome to the Cutter's Notch podcast, named after the fictional small town found in several of author Michael DeCamp's books. This podcast explores anything related to creativity. You'll hear interviews with creative people, such as authors, artists, performers, and entrepreneurs, sprinkled with friendly banter about any number of topics, all of which attempt to view the world through the lens of creativity. Turn up the volume and enjoy the latest conversations in Cutter's Notch.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Cutter's Notch podcast. I'm Mike DeCamp, one of your two marvelous hosts. My other host is across from me, and that is...
Nancy DeCamp. Hello, Mike. Well, hello, everybody.
Hello, Nancy. And we're excited to be with you here, restarting our podcast after a short hiatus of about, maybe 5 or 6 weeks, something like that. I was busy with directing traffic at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. I did that for a while, and then I took off on a two-week driving adventure, which we're going to talk about today. That's kind of the subject of today's podcast. So I've had an interesting few weeks, but in the midst of all that, we didn't have time to put together a podcast. So here we are. We're back here, and we're gonna go with it. We're going to run with it.
Yeah.
But before we do that, we have to do our creative indulgences.
Yes, we
Nancy, what's your creative indulgence today?
So the creative indulgence I will share about today, I've had a little fun with some gardening stuff. And most specifically, I took some time a few weeks ago and I planted some sunflower seeds in little trays and let them grow up to be little sprouts. And then transplanted them into bigger little trays. So they got a little bigger. And this last week, I cleared out an area that I had in mind, and I've planted a lot of sunflowers that I'm hopeful, but if it's, I think they're the big ones, like they'll get 4 foot to 6 foot tall, but I don't recall which little packet I took them out of. So I would say that there's probably 15 to 20 that I planted. Yeah. So I'm excited to see how my little sunflower garden grows this summer.
How does your garden grow?
We will see. So I'm being creative, kind of an old school approach to seeding them and then planting them, and but done it in a kind of a creative way and placed them in a creative place because we have kind of a wall on the deck by where I planted them that I stained a kind of a medium wood brown. And so I'm thinking if they grow up tall at all, those bright yellow flowers against that darker brown, black brown. It's going to look kind of fun. So
that sounds right.
That's my creative effort in the garden.
I hope that succeeds. You've got a number of plants out there. I saw some potted plants. I think you have some snapdragons growing in another pot. You planted another rose. And so you've been very creative with that. Creative.
I've got a vision. It's going to take me a couple years or so to have the edging the way I want it to be, but I have a vision.
We have a new place, folks, and we're starting, well, it's not really from scratch, but we're changing
what
was there.
Yeah, the current look, it will be changing over the next couple of years in terms of the little edge gardens. So with that, Mike, tell me about what's your most recent creative indulgence.
Well, my creative indulgence really comes down to, well, my whole trip was kind of a creative indulgence in itself. It's one giant creative indulgence.
Right, right.
But within that, I did read a couple of books. One I read completely. The other one I finished after I got home, but it was almost finished. So across a two-week span, I almost read both of these books completely. But I thought I would tell the audience about them. If you like kind of high intrigue, spy-ish, techno thriller with a strong female lead,
yeah,
I would recommend Dean Koontz's Jane Hawk series.
It's a whole series?
It's a whole series. There's 5 books in it.
Is this the first one or have you read others?
No, this one finished it up.
Okay.
So there's 5 books in the series: The Silent Corner, The Whispering Room, The Crooked Staircase, The Forbidden Door, and The Night Window.
Okay.
This was The Night Window. Very satisfying wrap up of the series. She was fun to follow.
I like that because sometimes when authors are finishing up a series, that last book kind of falls or it's just rushed to finish the story sometimes.
Yeah.
And so it's good to hear that you felt like it was a good wrap up to the series.
It was an excellent wrap up to the series, I thought. Very satisfying. The concept is there's these really rich and powerful people who are in the, well, they're very wealthy. And so some of those are like off the hook, kind of weird. And then they have these high end tech people, and they've created this nanotechnology that they can use to implant in people's brains, and it takes over their minds. And it leads to, they have a number of options when they implant them in their minds. And one of them is causing people to basically end their own life, which is how Jane Hawk got involved. And then there's others that they basically wipe their minds, so they're completely mindless.
That makes me think about, what was that show that we watched? Severance?
Severance.
Yeah. Kind of that kind of, I wouldn't say genre, but kind of a concept of like that where reality is not truly reality.
Yeah. This is set in modern day. So sure. It's not really set in the future, but it's, I would recommend that techno thriller series. It's 5 books by Dean Koontz.
And what's the other one that you?
The other book I read?
Yeah.
It's a new Jack Reacher. Well, it's not, I don't know about new, but it's one of the latest Jack Reacher books.
And I know you love Jack Reacher books. Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I love to read about him beating up on people. it's called The Sentinel. It's funny. The title of the book is the smallest part of the cover. Jack Reacher is across the top. Lee Child is in giant letters.
Well, of course.
And it's with his brother, Andrew Child. Oh. I think that Lee Child might be handing Jack Reacher over to Andrew Child in the future. So they're writing some of them together. At least I think that's my understanding. I could tell that there was a slightly different mind writing some of this because they use language that I hadn't seen before. And I've read a lot of Jack Reacher stories.
Right.
But I enjoyed this one. In this book, again, you know, he's in a mess, and it's down in Tennessee, and he's saving the people who need to be saved and beating up the people who need to be beaten up and killing the people who need to be killed. So it's a typical Jack Reacher story.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed it. I did enjoy it. I don't think I rated it as high as the others, but I did enjoy the story.
Well, good. You know what? Summer Scent tends to be the time. I mean, you and I are readers. But summer tends to be the time that, you know, the summer reads, the beach reads, that people sometimes get into that. So it'd be interesting to know what some of our listeners have indulged in reading wise over the summer as
right,
well.
Right. Yeah. If you're listening to us, feel free to drop us an email at michael@authormichaeldecamp.com. Let us know what you're reading.
Yeah.
And it'd be fun to see what our listeners read.
Yeah, would be. Might give us some other ideas and too.
Absolutely. Send us your recommendations. Yeah. That would be fun. If you've listened to us very long, you kind of know what we kind of like to read. So if you think it's something we're interested in, send it over. If you don't think it's something we're interested in,
tell us anyway.
We'd like to know about it.
So anyways, we're really here to talk about the trip you take. There was no issue between Mike and I on this trip.
She didn't kick me out.
I didn't kick him out. He didn't just leave and say, I'm doing this without you. He went with my blessing. He's always wanted to do this driving trip.
I've been talking about this years. Trip for decades.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yes. He has talked about it so much. And it wasn't ever something I was really big interested in. And finally, at one point I said, okay, well, when I retire and I have extra time, I feel comfortable taking a couple of weeks. We'll do it. But then since Mike retired this last year, and I was like, you know, what if I retire and then I change my mind and then he misses or we
can't. And I never get to do it.
There is the opportunity. So I think this last year, I was like, you know, why don't you think about getting a friend or just going solo and doing it? And then if when I retire, we decide to do another road trip, great. But you would not have missed the opportunity to do something you've talked about.
Well, the thing is that Nancy doesn't like long road trips. Just driving in the car every day would drive her insane and be physically painful in some ways. And I can't say it's not painful for me. In fact, I had some shoulder issues, a little bit of hip issue when I'm driving, but overall I enjoyed what I did.
Yeah.
I think if we had waited, the idea was we would stretch it out, take a longer period of time, so that we're not driving every single day.
Right.
In my adventure, I drove every single day.
So what motivated you to go ahead and do it versus waiting and seeing if we did it together or whatever? Well, what motivated you at this point in time to take the trip?
I think it was just, I had the time, I had the funds, I have a new car. Why not?
Sure.
And you didn't mind. Mm-hmm. I was a little nervous about being away from you that long, to be honest, because I think in our marriage, we have, I don't know that we've ever been, I guess one time you took a trip to Scotland.
Yeah.
We were apart a couple of weeks. Yeah. Other than that, we've
always been around each other.
We've always been around each other.
We maybe like a day or two here or there, but.
We like to travel together.
Yeah.
And I still like to travel. I kept thinking along the way when I would see something, it would be really nice to have Nancy here. Nancy would really like this.
Yeah.
She'd
really
think this is cool. So I just decided to do it for that reason. And I think anybody out there who, you know, you don't know what tomorrow is going to bring.
Right.
And, you know, if I had waited however many years it is until you retire, you know, maybe I'm not capable of making the trip at that point. Or maybe you're not capable.
Yeah, good point.
You know, life changes on a dime.
It does.
Especially as you start to reach retirement age. So we won't go into the details of that, but things can happen. So I had the availability.
Like carpe diem, right?
Yeah, seize the day. So decided to go ahead and do it. I've always wanted to do a cross-country trip. I've done a couple of cross-country drives. I was going to say,
you've driven cross-country before.
Well,
to California and back from California.
Yeah, a couple of times. Yeah. So, but those were straight through, like grinding.
Yeah, yeah.
One I did with my brother, drove from Muncie, Indiana to San Jose, California.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was a straight through kind of thing. And it was, you know, you're
not enjoying the sights along the way.
No, especially when you start to get sleepy and you can't, you know, it was horrible.
Yeah.
Not that I didn't enjoy being with him and being with my niece.
But it wasn't a vacation.
No, well, not really. And then I had another time where I helped my nephew drive from Tracy, California, back to Indianapolis.
Yep.
We did stop one night, but then it turned into a grind.
Because you realized
we had to get back.
We got to get some miles here. Yeah.
Yeah. So that both of those turned into less than fun.
Yeah.
We had both of them had their moments.
Yeah.
But this one, I was able to take the time to go down some roads I'd never been down, to see some sights I'd never seen, to go some places that were off the beaten path that maybe you wouldn't accidentally go there.
So what were your parameters to your trip plan?
Well, I wanted to keep it in like the 2-week range.
Yeah.
I wanted to eat at places that were not chains.
Okay.
So I wanted to...
The local, whatever.
Local food. One of my ideas was to have a milkshake every afternoon just because I could.
Did you do that?
No.
Did you do it at all? Did you have a single milkshake while you were out there?
I had a milkshake with my friend John Goodman.
Okay.
I got to go visit a night with my friend John Goodman, who, if you listen to the podcast, he was the guest on the previous episode.
Yeah.
And he and I got to spend a whole evening and then the next morning for breakfast together.
Yeah.
We had dinner at a Mexican restaurant. And then next to that was this place that had these awesome milkshakes.
Yeah.
So we got a strawberry milkshake and then we watched the Pacers play the Oklahoma City.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's their name? OKC? I can't remember. What, did they win something? Anyway.
So your parameter changed a little bit. You didn't do a milkshake every day, but you wanted to do local food. Were there any other things that were your stipulations for how you wanted this trip to go?
Not really. I just wanted to see stuff. I did have one other one. Stay off interstates whenever possible. And that turned into quite an adventure a few times. So I set my Google Maps to avoid highways.
Okay.
So it took me, it kept me off the interstate.
Yeah.
And most of the time that was awesome. A couple of times it was less than stellar, but it was an adventure the whole time. And that was the point.
Yeah. But what made it less than stellar?
Well, when I went to Theodore Roosevelt National Park, which is in Western North Dakota, I got up that morning to go to the park. I was in Williston, North Dakota. I spent the night there. Drove past all the fracking wells. There are oil wells everywhere out there in western North Dakota, the fracking wells. You see the gas vents burning.
Right, they're everywhere. Interesting.
So it was kind of a drizzly day, and it was taking me down this highway. I went to the north unit. That was beautiful. I would recommend Theodore Roosevelt National Park. It was a beautiful place. Mm-hmm. And wildlife. I saw bison. I saw wild turkeys. I saw other things. Prairie dogs. It was a great, beautiful place.
Yeah.
I came out of the north unit and I drove to go to the south unit. It was probably a good hour or more down to the south unit.
Yeah.
And so I get back on the road and my GPS skipped I-94. The easiest way to get to the south unit is to jump on I-94 sure. West, get off at Medora, and you're right there. Well, since I had my GPS set to avoid highways, it took me south of I-94 mm-hmm. and then back west on this county road, which eventually became a dirt road. And not just a dirt road, it was a muddy dirt road. And I'm like sliding around, and the little squiggly thing came on my car to tell me I had traction issues.
You're like, really?
I look up in my rearview mirror, and my back window is completely covered in mud. And it was just a mucky, nasty drive. Now, at first I was like, oh, man. Then I thought, well, this is the adventure.
Exactly.
This is part of the adventure.
This is what I'm in for, right?
So I ended up getting to Medora and going into the South Unit. And that was really nice and really pretty as well. Had lunch in Medora.
Yeah.
And then I ignored my GPS and went on I-94 West.
Just to get out of the area.
To get out of the area. And then went back to the avoiding highways.
So what were other interesting, instead of just going chronologically on your trip here, what were other interesting roads or vistas or areas that you experienced in this adventure?
Well, I'm still carrying part of the Montana Highway 2 on the bottom side of my car.
Yeah.
Yeah. So apparently Montana, they decided to resurface, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 miles of Highway 2 across Montana. And rather than like do one half of the highway, finish it.
Like one lane.
And switch over and then do the other half. They decided to tear up the entire roadway and basically let people continue to drive on it. So they were grinding it up. On one side.
Is it like asphalt or cement?
It was asphalt. They had ground up asphalt. So they ground up one side and they were grinding up the other side and letting us drive on the side that they ground up already.
Yeah.
And it had rained on it a little bit. I didn't ever run through a really big rainstorm the whole time. I was really shocked.
Yeah.
But I had some drizzly times and there had been some significant rain that I just missed. And it had rained on this roadway. And I feel I can hear it like throwing itself up underneath my car.
Sure.
And I'm thinking it's like I still hadn't cleaned that mud off from that muddy road because it hadn't rained. I hadn't found anything. But I finally got to Kalispell, Montana that evening, and I found a spray, like a car wash sprayer place. It's the only place I found.
Yeah.
And I was trying to spray it off, and I sprayed all the mud that I could get off, but that roadway stuck.
Oh.
It wouldn't move. High power spray wouldn't break it off. When I got to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, I found an automatic car wash, went through there. It's still stuck on there.
So you have part of Montana with
I did another automatic car wash back here in Indianapolis, and there's still Montana stuck underneath my car. it's like permanently adhered. It'll eventually probably break off. Most of it's gone. It did give me a vibration in the wheels for a while, but it's most of it's cleared up. Probably another thing I came across that was out of the way and unusual was just the whole Fort Peck Hotel.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about it.
That's in Fort Peck, Montana. It's after I did Theodore Roosevelt. It's where I stopped for
that's the one where you videoed with the girls and you sent us a video of
the room?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, so I didn't know what to expect. When I was making my reservations, let's just face it, I like my comfort. And so for the most part, I was doing chain hotels.
Yeah.
Stayed at Hampton Inns. I stayed at Candlewood Suites. I stayed at Holiday Inns.
But not this place.
I was looking for some place in western Montana or eastern Montana where I could spend the night. And there's not a lot of choices. And I came across the Fort Peck Hotel.
Okay.
And I thought, well, this is really interesting. I looked at it online. Yeah. This is really interesting.
And was it interesting when you were there live?
Yes. So I got to meet the owners, Cliff and Tina Wakefield.
Yeah.
But when I first got there, I'm like, I'm taken aback, right? Because remember, I like my comfort.
Yeah.
And so I pull up in front of the place and the grass is a little bit high and the building looks like it's a little...
You're thinking The Shining a little rough bit.
Around just, the edges.
Yeah, kind a little of haunted place.
A little bit like The Shining. In fact, Tina said that to me. If I want to do a Stephen King thing on my books, then you know I could come out there and stay and they'd Stephen King me.
They'd put you up while you worked on it.
I pull up in front. There's like this looping driveway and I'm looking and it's just rough around the edges everywhere.
Right.
So I get out and I'm like, what have I done? Well, I go up the stairs and I walk inside and inside the lobby was gorgeous.
Yeah.
They had a bar on one side. Currently they don't have their liquor license, so it's not active.
Right.
But
right.
The bar is set up still there.
Yeah.
On the left side is just a really beautiful lobby with a fireplace and books and everything. It was just really pretty. Cliff was walking through and can I help you? And I said, yeah, I have a reservation. And so he got me all checked in, gave me my key. I'm like, now where do I park? Because I'm pretty sure you don't want me to park in that drive-thru. He's like, yeah, do it down here, go down left, another left. And so basically I went to the back of the building.
Yeah.
It's a gravel driveway, gravel parking lot. rough around the edges on the back.
Yeah.
The doors don't, the entry doors, like you just pull them, you don't have to turn the knob. And I walked in and... Back in the back is kind of their like kitchen dining area, yeah. A little shop. And
yeah.
I got to my room and it's a wooden door with a key lock.
An actual
key lock, not an electronic thing, just an actual key lock. And it had old fashioned hardware and you can tell it's original.
Right.
And you go in and I'm like, oh my. I knew there was no TVs.
Yeah.
It's one of those places where you don't go expecting.
You're not going to go
luxury.
And, yeah.
Right. You go for the ambiance.
Think about more of a, well, you say ambiance, but I think about like a national park or a state park.
Right.
Kind of place.
Yeah. Right. And so I go in and I look in the bathroom and it's an old time ceramic sink with individual knob.
Oh, kind of like what you grew up with.
Kind of what I grew up with on South Hackley Street in Muncie, Indiana. The shower was a stand up shower, no bathtub, stand up shower with wood slats on the floorboard of the shower.
Interesting.
The bed was comfortable.
Well, good.
I must say, I was like, oh no, you know, what's this going to be like sleeping? Turned out to be very comfortable. The bed was comfortable. The room temperature was fine.
Did you sleep well the whole trip?
No.
Because it wasn't.
Even in my luxury places, right? My timing was off.
Okay. Yeah, because you're going through time zones.
My food was different. And so I was having a little bit of digestional issues.
Sure.
And it would wake me up sometimes at 3 o'clock in the morning to take care of that issue. And then I'd have trouble going back to sleep. So I slept really well, probably 3/4 of the time.
Okay. Well, that's not a bad percentage.
The Fort Peck Hotel, back to that.
Yeah.
It's near Fort Peck Lake. The hotel is where the guy's office and residence was, who was in charge of building the dam.
Oh, that's interesting.
And it's really only one of two or three businesses in the whole town.
Huh.
They're trying to recreate what they're going to do there. They may turn it into more of a lodge than a hotel,
mm-hmm.
create an area where people can cook their own food, that kind of thing. I just try to make it a little bit more in line because they're struggling against the Airbnbs.
Sure.
So at any rate, I loved it there. I loved the Wakefields and I got to be really good friends with them. If you go there, they have a couple of my books. And
oh, fun.
So I don't know if they'll be in their lobby or not.
So speaking of the Wakefields and meeting them, did you meet any other interesting characters or people?
Not that many. Yeah. Honestly, I had some really...
I'm surprised, because you're such a friendly guy.
Well, I had some really nice servers or, you know, wait staff at different restaurants. Yeah. That was really cool. I spent time with a couple of our nieces and their husbands and families. And
but you already knew them.
But I already knew them.
You
know, otherwise, I didn't really like...
I'm very surprised.
All of my interactions with people were pretty in passing. I did have a moment in... Keeping in mind, this is in the middle when I'm recording this. We have just gone through this whole Iran conflict, right? And we, sometime toward the end of my trip, we bombed the nuclear sites. The U.S. bombed the nuclear sites in Iran. So there's this thing going on. I passed through Yellowstone. I stopped at one place in Yellowstone because I thought I saw an animal up on a hillside.
Yeah.
So I got out, got my binoculars to take a good look. Turned out to be a tree stump. No big deal. False alarm.
I've seen many a wolf that looked like tree stumps.
This was a real tree stump. So I put my binoculars away, and I had not seen anybody around me. And all of a sudden, I hear right behind me, sir, can you tell me where Old Faithful is? Only he had a Middle Eastern accent. And I turn around, and he looked like a Persian guy. And it just, like, he came up on me out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Turned out to be no big deal. I gave him directions to Old Faithful. We were all good.
But it startled you because he just came up on you.
Yeah. Came up out of nowhere. And it's made me think, well, what if I wasn't ready at that point. Otherwise, I just met random people.
You need to always be ready and aware of your surroundings, Michael.
I should be, but I just wasn't expecting it in Yellowstone. But maybe that's where you do need to expect it.
Yeah, right? You expect it where you don't. You should always be around. Public service announcement, listeners. You should always be aware of your surroundings, whether you're at home, out downtown, out in the country. You always need to be aware of your surroundings. Doesn't mean you need to be scared or geared up or ready for a fight, but you just need to be smart and aware. So
I did stop. I did meet a really nice gentleman who was one of the salespeople at the Well-Read Moose, which is a bookstore in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho.
Oh, I like the name of that.
Yeah, I stopped in there. It was with my niece Megan, her husband Pat, and their kids Max and Josie, and we stopped in there. I had reached out to them before I went out there just to see if we could coordinate something, and it didn't work out, but I wanted to go into the store anyway.
Yeah.
And I met this guy. He's actually from Chicago, but he lives out there. He works in the store. And I gave them a copy of The Purveyor of Death. But he was a really nice guy.
Good.
I bought a book while I was there. So I bought C.J. Box's third book in his Joe Pickett series called Winterkill.
You like that series too.
I know. I'm in the middle of reading this one. So that was cool. So he was a nice guy. It was nice to meet him. Other than that, I really didn't meet that many people that I really interacted with enough to retain it.
For a stranger to
it was more about interesting restaurants.
Okay, well, let's talk about that.
Yeah, so the whole idea was I was going to stay away from chain restaurants.
Yeah, and so, was that so what easy I did, or hard?
First time I ate lunch, Arby's.
To be fair, I have a hard time getting you to go to Arby's if we're doing a fast food restaurant at home. It's not high on your list. Well, so that is kind of an adventure for you.
Yeah. The first food place I stopped was a Starbucks, and it was in Michigan. I was going to meet one of my former coworkers at Starbucks, and she couldn't make it. She had an emergency come up. As it turned out, it was fine because the Starbucks was in a grocery store and didn't even have any chairs or tables.
Yeah.
So we would have had to hang out in the parking lot.
You could have walked the lanes and see what produce looked good that
but
week.
But anyway, I got coffee. I stopped for lunch at Arby's. I went all the way up to Whitefish Point on Lake Superior, which is something I always wanted to see.
Yeah.
And then I grabbed dinner that night. And guess where I ate? Pizza Hut.
Mike.
So first day was kind of a bust for eating at...
Just because there weren't things around where you were at the time.
Weren't a lot of options. By the time I got to the hotel, I was exhausted. And Pizza Hut was next door.
Gotcha.
But the next day was better. Okay. I got breakfast in... I can't say the name of this town. Ishpeming, Michigan? Ishpeming? I'm going to...
Spell it.
I-S-H-P-E-M-I-N-G.
Okay.
Ishpeming. I don't know if that's correct or not. But anyway, I ran across Sherry's restaurant, and I did it through my Google. I was able to go to Google add-on stop and look for restaurants, and it popped up. And I'm like, oh, that looks good.
Such a millennial thing to do.
Yeah. But
it worked.
It worked. And it worked several times on this trip. A few times it didn't because there really was nothing.
Yeah.
But
Sherry's for breakfast?
Was, man, off the hook.
Yeah.
Great breakfast. If you are in... the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Ishpa,
whatever.
However you say that name, go to Sherry's restaurant. Tell them that Michael DeCamp sent you
and have breakfast. Right at the best booth there is. You know,
they're all about the same. But nice counter. It was like a little diner. Bacon, eggs.
Just the way you like them?
Delicious. They did everything perfectly. It was awesome. I wish we could just run up there on Saturday and get some breakfast.
But yeah, that'd be a little bit of a drive.
Yeah, it's probably a 12-hour drive.
What other interesting places did you eat at?
Well, that day at lunch, I had Julie's Family Restaurant in Superior, Wisconsin, which is just outside of Duluth, Minnesota. And I had an olive and cream cheese burger. Never had an olive and cream cheese burger.
Yeah, I can't say I've ever tried one.
Apparently, it's something that they do that's popular.
So it's like, is it a burger made out of olives and cream cheese?
No, it's a regular burger, but it's got this green olive and cream cheese.
Like a spread.
Stuff on top.
Okay.
And if they had just spread it, like just a spread on it, I would have liked it. But it was actually a glob. And so it was like as much of that as there was burger.
And you didn't unglob it?
I didn't unglob it. I did begin to dip it in ketchup.
That sounds even worse.
Sorry, guys. I think that Julie's Family Restaurant is good, and I think that the burger, for some people, would love that.
Yeah.
I think it was just a little overwhelming for me. So maybe I should have trimmed some of it off instead of dipping it. But
you didn't want to hurt Sherry's feelings.
I didn't want to hurt. Well, I never met. It wasn't Sherry anyway.
Well, that's true. Or Julie. You didn't want to meet because you had Sherry for breakfast.
Yeah, Sherry. Be careful how you say that. That's going to get me in trouble with you.
But Julie.
Yeah.
Yeah, you didn't.
So.
You didn't want to make Julie upset.
The other.
But then you didn't meet her because you weren't making friends on this trip.
Well, I was friendly with everybody, but.
But you didn't make friends.
Yeah, I made friends with the Wakefields. Yeah.
Well, yeah. All right. What other interesting food?
I kept running into diners, like the old 50s style diners.
Ooh, like on the movie, The Blob.
Shiny on the outside.
Yeah, like a streamline or what are the airstreams?
Almost like that. Yeah, I ate at three different places that I ran across three of them on the
way.
So
rate the three.
Rate the three.
One, probably, two, and three. Yeah.
It would be between the Kroll's Diner in Minot, North Dakota. In Oakley's Diner in Oakley,
and why would you rate those as high?
Because they were both really, really good. I had burgers. Well, I might have had a club sandwich. At any rate, the food was really good. Everything was nice.
Yeah.
Dixie's Diner in where did I have that at? Well, that was Idaho Falls. So Dixie's Diner in Idaho Falls. I don't really rate it down. Compared to the other two, I had dinner there.
Yeah.
Dinner was fine. And the atmosphere was great. It was beautiful on the inside, just like the others. Both Oakley's and the Dixie had the little jukeboxes on the
table. Oh, at the individual tables?
Each table.
Did you play yours?
I did not.
Missed opportunity.
But I didn't hear any music playing. So they might be more decorative than real. It was really kind of a cool place. And I always feel bad when I go to a place like that.
Which you should. Let me tell you, people.
Nancy is holding a grudge.
I have a grudge. This is one thing in our marriage that I've held against him. So in Muncie, Indiana, years ago, there was a diner just like he's describing called the Pixie Diner, right?
Right. And South Madison Street, Muncie, Indiana.
Yeah, I was like, Mike, I want you to take me there sometime. Why don't you take me there? Yeah, we'll go.
Before we ever did, it closed.
Yeah. So
she's held it against me ever since.
You understand my sore feelings about these diners.
I didn't cause the Pixie to close.
No.
It just closed. I wasn't expecting it to close. It had been there my whole life.
You were not proactive and on it. Oh, we'll get around to it.
Well, that's true. But it was just kind of weird on this trip to run across three of those.
Right? That is
along my drive. So I didn't go out of my way to find them. I went past them.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I guess the Kroll's I found on my Google thing.
Right. But it was right in the direction that you were going. Right. It wasn't like you plotted your way. Cause I'm sure there's a lot of those diners across the country, but you didn't plot your way from diner to diner.
I just found them.
Yeah.
And that was kind of fluky.
Any else restaurant or interesting food item you had while you were on your trip?
I had too many burgers, too many fries. I stopped at the 701 Chop House in Williston, North Dakota. That was pretty good for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
They had a really nice dessert, which was a croissant stuffed with blueberry filling and ice and vanilla ice cream. That was really good.
Interesting.
The steak was good. But, you know, other than those diners and the burgers and stuff, that probably does it kind of food. I had really good food. Megan and Pat, you know, fixed me dinner. We had grilled steak and some good food there.
Wow.
They cook outside. They have chickens and they have their own little raised bed garden. And this cute little house in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho.
Yeah. And what'd you think of Coeur d'Alene?
I loved Coeur
d'Alene. I've heard a lot of, and I've seen pictures.
I was there for Coeur d'Alene. So the name of the town is Coeur d'Alene.
Yes.
And every year they have this ginormous car show. Takes over downtown Coeur d'Alene. And there was block after block after block of classic cars.
Yeah.
So we took a stroll down through the classic cars. That was pretty good. That was pretty awesome. It's a beautiful little town. Very walkable.
Oh, I'd like that.
It's right on the lake. It's got libraries. It's got walking trails. It's got sidewalks. You would love it there, Nancy. You would love it there.
All right, I'll have
to. And Megan would probably love it if we moved there.
Book my room at their Marvel Inn.
So we had a really nice time there. I had a nice dinner with Kelly and Sean down in Francis, Utah, yeah. And all four of their dogs.
Yeah. But did you see the horse?
I did. I saw one of them. She's got
a couple of them. Yeah.
Yeah, and she's got goats.
Yeah,
so she's got a horse, and she got horses. She got goats. She's got dogs. One was a giant, I can't remember the name of it. It's a big, like, herding kind of dog, but it's huge. It often stays with sheep out in the forest.
Yeah.
But it would just lean against me.
Aww,
a big, like, lovable ball of fur. He just wanted to be loved. Then there were a couple of them that were very, very skittish.
Yeah.
And they were trying to get comfortable around me, but I wasn't there long enough.
Yeah, you're not one of us yet.
Yeah. And then they had the old Cocker Spaniel who was just kind of moseyed around.
And the goats.
I saw the goats a little bit.
Yeah.
Saw the horse. Sean took me on a drive up into the Wasatch or Uintas Forest. Mm-hmm. I can't pronounce it. Uintas, whatever. But we went way up. We were up at 10,000 feet. We were looking out over where they had the big forest fire last year. And that was pretty interesting. But then they fixed me a really nice chicken dinner.
Awesome. So,
but my most wonderful thing, probably, I don't know if I should say most wonderful, but the thing that blew my mind was I almost, when I left Kelly and Sean's to drive across Wyoming, I knew it was going to be a long day across the middle of Wyoming.
Right. Big, big stretch to cover.
And I thought, it was like going to be over 8 hours. And I thought, I just need to skip that. Take the interstate. Go away from my avoiding highways. Take the interstate so I can cut my drive to maybe 6 hours. I changed my mind at the last second and decided to stay with avoiding highways.
Yeah.
I am so glad I did.
Why?
The views were off the hook.
Really? So, this is Wyoming.
Well, most of it. The beginning part of it would have been on this part, no matter what I did.
A little bit of Utah,
Because I went through those mountains. I went way up over the mountain pass.
Oh, yeah.
In Utah, and that was astounding. I saw deer after deer after deer.
Yeah.
Two of them tried really hard to get killed by me.
Did they want to go on the ride with you?
Yeah,
they wanted to go to the next diner.
But I managed to slam on the brakes and send all my stuff to the floorboard and not hit them.
That's good.
But I got through there. But then I started off across Wyoming. It did take me on a couple of dirt roads again.
Again?
Yeah, but man, the scenery across the middle part of Wyoming was off. I am in love with Wyoming.
Wow.
It was just, I mean, hardly any cars around. I didn't have to worry about passing anybody or them passing me for the most part.
So nice
solitude.
There
was a little bit of that,
Good scenery, nice solitude.
Nice solitude. I saw one guy pulling a trailer. A camper and it was really, really windy. And all of a sudden the siding of his camper started peeling off.
Oh goodness.
In the middle of nowhere, Wyoming.
Right, right.
I don't know what he did, but he had to stop.
Yeah.
But there was no place to stop and eat. So I'll tell you what, that day, it would have been good to have food in my cooler, but I didn't have food in my cooler anymore. I just had snacks, but man, the scenery was off the hook. I would love to go back out there and explore more.
Interesting.
Loved Wyoming.
Good.
And then the last part of the trip really was seeing, I had like three more things I wanted to stop and do.
Yeah. And what was that?
Wounded Knee in Pine Ridge, South Dakota, in the Sioux Indian, Lakota Sioux, Native American reservation there. There's a Wounded Knee Memorial, which is where the massacre of 1890 took place. Something like 140 natives, men, women, children, babies, and some U.S. cavalry troops were all obliterated in one last final showdown.
Wow. What was the feeling there? I mean, did it feel like a sad place or a solemn place or a,
yeah.
Did you sense ghosts?
Well, no, I didn't sense any ghosts.
Okay.
I have to say, going in there, you wonder how welcome you'll be, because I have no Native American blood that I'm aware of coursing through my veins. And so I wondered how welcome I would be, because it's obviously a sacred site for the Native Americans.
And a travesty committed by the cavalry.
Yeah. And reading the sign that tells the story, I don't know whose viewpoint put that sign up. It's kind of seems balanced, but I don't know how balanced it really is.
Right, right. And so long ago, who
the setting knows is for sure. The setting is beautiful. It was a sunny day. I could see long, long ways. It's just a big there's a big open pastures, not just pastures, but grasslands, parking lot. And then you turn around and up the hill is the cemetery where they buried all the natives in one mass grave.
Yeah.
It's like 140 of them, I think. I might not have that number right. But they put all the natives that were killed in the massacre in one giant grave at the top of this hill. And now around it is an active cemetery.
Yeah.
And I was able to go up there. I asked if I ran into a couple of Native Americans that were there in the parking lot. They were selling, you know,
handmade goods.
Mm-hmm. And I bought a few things from them. And I asked if they said that, you know, that I could go up there. I'm like, is it okay for me to go up there? You know, I wanted to make sure I was thoughtful and considerate.
Sure.
And they said, absolutely, you can go up there. So I made my way up there. I walked around, took a couple of pictures, tried to be kind of subtle about that. And it was kind of moving, stirring.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I feel for the pain of those people. One of the things I got to thinking about here, I'm going to throw this idea out. I haven't done anything with it, but I thought of all the Native Americans in this country, they're all U.S. citizens now as of 1920 something or other. But all the ones who are on these reservations are all under federal guidance, and they have kind of a whole separate world within the Bureau of Land Management or Bureau of Indian Affairs,
yeah.
I think is what they call it. I wondered if they couldn't just take all those folks and turn it into one state and give them senators and representatives in Congress and give them equal standing. So they actually have a real voice and real representation.
Oh, interesting.
So I was just thinking about that, toying with that idea while I was out there. When I left there, I had one more stop, but I stopped in Clear Lake, Iowa the next day.
Mm-hmm.
My last two things, I went to Buddy Holly's crash site. So the place where Buddy Holly, Richie Valens, and the Big Bopper, where their plane crashed and all three of them and their pilot died.
Right.
You can go and you can actually walk to the actual spot where the plane crashed.
Yeah.
There's a kind of a memorial there. Giant black glasses that like Buddy Holly always wore.
Yeah.
That kind of marked the beginning of the trail. And so I wanted to go there. Didn't sense any ghosts either.
All right. All right.
It was intriguing because a lot of people still go there. There were a lot of people. I won't say it was crowded, but there were people already out there when I got there, and there were people coming in and driving by as I left. So it's a regularly visited site.
Sure.
And then I found a Taco Tico.
Taco Tico.
Most of you out there wouldn't have any idea. But growing up in Muncie, Indiana, there was a Taco Tico on the south side of town. I used to go there a lot after church and other times, get tacos and Sancho's. And it closed like 30 years ago, back in the 80s.
Yeah.
And I discovered that they still exist out there in the world. And I found one that was like 8 miles from the Buddy Holly crash site.
And was it like the Taco Tico that you had?
Exactly like.
Really?
It's the same organization.
So it was a chain organization across the country at one point in time.
There's only a handful of many more.
I knew of the one in Muncie, but that was my only exposure was that one.
Yeah, the franchise has shrunk. There's only a handful of them anymore, but it was the real deal. And I got myself three tacos and a Sancho and sat there and read my book and ate my food and got a bloody nose out of nowhere. That was weird. But anyway, that ended it.
Yeah.
That was the last of my real big adventures. So, I had one more night on the road and then I drove home.
So would you do an adventure like this alone again? Maybe not necessarily like this, but would you do an adventure again on your own?
I think I would, but I don't know if I want to do 2 weeks.
Yeah.
2 weeks is a long time to be away from you.
Oh,
I'm kind of attached. Maybe a week.
Yeah.
It'd be fun if I had maybe somebody with me that I really kind of click with.
Right.
I might do it a little bit longer.
You know, that's something though. If you can travel with somebody, that says something about you, because you can't just travel with anybody.
No. It's funny. You start to know. After you've been with somebody locked in a car with them for hours,
you know every day, them really well.
Yeah, you either love them or you begin to hate them after a while. And maybe the hate isn't permanent, but it lasts to the end of the trip.
Yeah, I don't want to. I'm done with you. Yeah.
And, you know, I had most of the time when I've traveled with people, like for work, I've loved it.
Yeah.
I have had a couple of times, at least once, where we got off on a bad track and it was just terrible riding with them the rest
of
the time.
Sure.
I have had times when I've ridden with friends on a trip and it was rough.
Yeah.
It got rough. It started off wonderful and then it got rough because personalities begin to clash.
It's a real indicator. It's a real indicator for sure.
Yeah. So I would do it again under certain circumstances.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would do that long.
Yeah.
Or that far.
Yeah. It's a lot of windshield time.
A lot of windshield time. Lots of time to think.
But your career was used to that. Wasn't something that was was foreign to you.
And I mixed up the windshield time, which is thought time. I also listened to music, started listening to classic country on Pandora.
No!
And I listened to podcasts and I got an audiobook, Stephen King's Nightmares and Dreamscapes short story collection. So I listened to all. I did. That was my mixture.
Yeah.
And that was that was pretty good. Kept me going.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's the trip, folks.
Sounds interesting and a creative way to approach your adventure. So I think it's time for you to answer a random question.
Oh, you're going to put it on me, huh?
Yeah. You pull it out and you have to answer it first.
All right. Here we go. Let's see. It says, what do you think will be the biggest change in your life 5 years from now?
I already know what mine is. What would yours be?
The biggest change in my life 5 years from now is your biggest change in your life.
Yeah.
That would be your retirement.
Yeah. I'm hoping that within 5 years that it's a done deal.
Yeah. So I think in 5 years, hopefully I'll have a couple more books out by then. But I think that, we'll be in a different place in life.
Yeah, highly possible.
And I can't really picture what it will look like, honestly.
Yeah.
But I am eager to get there. I don't want to rush it. I want to live my life while I get there. But,
sure.
I think when you join me in the retirement side, that opens up a whole world of opportunities.
Yeah. So for sure.
What about you?
Well, that I just said.
Same for you.
For the big thing for me was in potentially 5 years being retired, and that would be a big change because I work hard.
What do you look forward to in retirement?
Doing some other kind of work.
Yeah. So this is the difference between Nancy and I. I look forward to being able to do what I want to do. Follow
take
my creative
nap, take
ideas.
Take a walk, write a book, take a trip. I'm like, okay, is there a nonprofit organization I could volunteer with on a regular basis? Is there a senior volleyball league that I get involved in?
It's
great that you shared your trip with us, Mike, and hopefully that spurs some ideas for some of our listeners to take an adventure of their own.
Yeah, check out some of these places. Anyway, folks, thank you very much for joining us on this rundown of my big, fantastic 2-week driving adventure. And we'll catch you next time with hopefully another interview coming up with someone. And we'll catch you on that episode of the Better Snotch podcast.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Cutter's Notch podcast. Your hosts have been Michael and Nancy DeCamp. Michael is the author of several fantasy thriller novels and short stories that can be found on Amazon or ordered through your local bookseller. Visit www.authormichaeldecamp.com to learn more. His most recent release, The Purveyor of Death, Doc Moon Book 1, is a classic young adult horror novel and the first book in a new series. It's guaranteed to keep you turning pages. Nancy is Michael's number one fan with a love and appreciation for creativity everywhere. The Cutter's Notch podcast is available through most podcast listing providers. Subscribe to catch each new episode as it drops. You can reach us by sending an email to michael@authormichaeldecamp.com. Join us again on the next episode of the Cutter's Notch podcast.